So something that I don't freely admit to everybody is that I am, for the first time, getting through the Harry Potter series. All of them.
Oh my gosh.
I'm currently halfway through the fourth book. I don't like reading. We've talked about this.
This is actually a point of pain in our relationship.
I have two books from you.
Yes.
On my coffee table. Haven't touched them.
I know you haven't.
Yeah.
I've committed you several times.
You
will not.
I don't know what it is. But when you do an audio book, because I'm huge into podcasts, that's essentially what an audio book is. It's just this big, long narrative thing.
Yeah.
I am loving it. Turns out Harry Potter is pretty good.
It's a good podcast.
It's a really long podcast. I mean, the fourth book alone is like 20 hours of content.
Gosh.
But anyway, yeah, I'm using Audible and, I'm very much enjoying it. So, I wanted to tell our listeners that we actually have a banner on our website where you can go and if you go specifically through our website and go to Audible and sign up for Audible, then you can get 30 days free. A lot of places you can get 7 days free. You can get a 14-day free trial, but through us, you can get a 30-day free trial of Audible, because then you can try it. You can listen to all 20 hours of the fourth Harry Potter book, and if you don't like it, then you can leave. There's no contract or anything.
So 30 days seems like a lot. Seems like a lot of time to get for free.
Yeah.
Is it because all of the executives at Audible are fans of this podcast?
Every single one of them.
I figured that.
Yeah.
I suspected that. This is proof.
I got a phone call and it was like, hey, we love your podcast. And I'm like, who's we? And it was like, the entire advisory board at Amazon. I was like, that makes sense. I understand.
Amazon?
Amazon owns Audible. You didn't know that?
Jeff Bezos.
Yeah, we jumped all the way to Amazon.
All the time that he's spending on Blue Origin and his penis rocket, he is listening to Nerd Critic.
Turns out he loves Nerd Critic.
He loves Nerd Critic.
And he's like, hey, you know what
we're
going to do?
Every time he takes a Bic to his head, he's listening to Nerd Critic.
He's like, you know what we're going to do for you, CJ? And I'm like, what? And he's like, we're going to give you 30 days free.
30 days free to anybody who listens to Nerd Critic.
The best they can offer. Welcome to Nerd Critic, a podcast about movies from the dual perspective of critical nerdiness. I am here with Jordan, our studied and credentialed critic.
Oh, yeah, that's me.
Yeah.
And this is CJ, our resident nerd.
That is me. We are here to talk about, well, should we? Yeah. So, okay.
If you've seen the title of the episode,
you know what we're talking about. But let me give you a little bit of context around how this landed, because Jumanji 2 is coming out, and we were going to do an episode on Jumanji, the first, not Robin Williams Jumanji, but just like the more recent, the previous one,
the first Dwayne Jumanji.
There you go, the first Dwayne Jumanji. And then I had the thought that maybe they would be some very similar conversations for the first Dwayne Jumanji and the second Dwayne Jumanji.
Dwayne the Rock Jumanji.
Yeah.
Jumanji.
Two. So while I was thinking about this, I watched a couple of movies over Thanksgiving weekend.
Mm.
And
ooh, I'm excited.
A couple of them were like really good. I like walked away. Like, how did this just sneak under my radar? So that's what inspired me to text you and say, hey, what if we switch it up and we do our underrated, because the two movies actually landed on my honorable mentions, but they had no reason to be good. And they were. And so I wanted to make sure to give them at least a little bit of attention.
All right.
Because I think that they deserve it.
I very simply went through the movies that I've seen in theaters.
Do you keep a list?
I don't. I use my AMC A-List app, which we're going to sort of inadvertently make an ad for every time we do an episode. I don't think it's a perfect system. I noticed some data corruption in terms of like the older movies. Like there was some data missing. So I don't know if it's actually a really great method of keeping track of the movies I've seen, but it's certainly better than I used in the past, which was nothing. So yeah, I need to be using like Letterboxd, but I don't. I will do that someday, but I haven't yet fully converted to the Letterboxd tradition. So
I assume
Letterboxd is basically social media for movie watching.
Oh, okay.
So you log movies you've seen, when you've seen them, you do ratings, you do reviews, you share them with friends, blah, 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 blah.
Got it.
Letterboxd is cool. You should use it. I should use it. Everyone should use it. I don't use it. But I will. Anyway, for now, I had to just go through my log of AMC A-list movies that I've seen because I've seen almost all the movies this year at AMC because of A-list. And I was surprised at some of the ones that I had forgotten that I'm like really excited that we get to talk about today.
So I also need to throw out the disclaimer that, and I'm not going to say what movies they are because I'm 90% sure they're on your list. But there are three movies off the top of my head that I can think of that are critical darlings that I have not seen. So they might have been on my list if I had seen them, but I had not. And I fully recognize that, that yours is, I think this is really going to highlight the critic in Jordan and the nerd in me.
Yeah, maybe.
Because I bet yours are pretty like critically great and mine are just like, I had a really good time. So that's where
we'll
land.
Okay. We'll see. Okay. Probably. And that's fine. You know, we need an episode every once in a while that shows that we're actually different people.
Yeah.
Not just the same person speaking in a different voice and editing it together as though we're two people hosting a podcast. Okay. So I don't have these in any particular order, except they are sort of roughly in reverse order of me seeing them. So it's going to be most recent and then reaching farther back into the past for the top five. So I have a top five, but then I have like three runners up.
I'm the exact same way.
Okay.
So we must be just the same person.
I think so.
I have a top five, three runners up. So give me one line on one of your runners up and then I'll go, then you go.
On the runners up?
Runners up.
All right. They Shall Not Grow Old, which I think actually was technically released in 2018.
Oh.
But I saw it in 2019, and it had more of a it was in theaters in January of 2019.
Got it.
So I'm not sure exactly how that shakes out.
They
Shall Not Grow Old is a documentary, is a very unique documentary made by Peter Jackson of Lord of the Rings fame, about World War I, using a bunch of footage from World War I.
Oh, that's right.
That he and a crack team of CGI experts treated this footage, tried to restore it and make it look as modern as possible, hired voice actors and professional forensic lip readers.
Crazy.
To identify what the people in the footage were saying. I mean, it's actually a stunning movie. It's a preview that will make you cry. And the movie itself is just sort of, it's fairly mesmerizing. So it's basically a documentary about World War I, primarily from the European perspective. And it shows just, yeah, it's a bunch of found footage and not really any voiceover, just like letters and other sort of readings and stuff. Anyway, it's really quite lovely.
Cool. Okay.
So that was way more than one line, but
no, that's
but I
fine.
Am finished.
That's fine. So my first runner up is Late Night. So did you see Late Night?
That's a top five for me, man.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh.
I love Late Night.
So I was going to say, Jordan, because you love TV so much, you should probably see Late Night.
I've seen it twice.
I won't talk about it then. We'll talk about that when you get to it. Okay. Go ahead on your next runner-up.
All right. My next runner-up is The Art of Self-Defense.
Oh, was that
Jesse
good?
Jesse Eisenberg.
Oh.
I liked it so much.
That's Netflix, right?
I actually don't know. I saw it in the theater.
Okay.
It was a limited release. I caught it before it left my AMC. One of the three AMC theaters that I frequent. It was a really, really interesting movie that I loved a lot for a lot of reasons, but was also very hard to watch, and a movie I probably won't be watching again.
Got it. Okay.
It was very, very, very interesting. It's a very unique film. It reminded me a lot of the guy who did The Favorite, and I am now kicking myself for not writing this down. But he did The Favorite and The Lobster, and he's a very well-known filmmaker.
Yeah.
He's very good. This movie stylistically reminded me of that guy a little bit in the way that he kind of puts together very weird pastiches of characters and very stilted environments where unnatural dialogue takes place throughout the whole thing. It's very consistent, very...
Lanthimos?
Lanthimos. Yorgos, Lanthimos. Yes. Yorgos Lanthimos. Thank you. That's a name I should not forget.
I mean, that's a tough one to remember.
It's a good one, though.
It is a good one.
Anyway, so that's my
cool
second runner-up.
All right, so my second runner-up. This is the movie that I watched that I was like, I want to at least mention something on Nerd Critic because it has no reason to be as good as it is. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
The live-action Dora the Explorer.
I've heard this. I've heard that it's good.
This movie has an 84% on Rotten Tomatoes. And I watched it and I was so pleasantly surprised. It was recommended to me by a mutual friend of ours that is a big movie buff. And so we went, my wife and I watched it over Thanksgiving weekend, and it was fun and it was self-aware and it didn't try too hard and it just... it had all the callbacks that you wanted in really fun ways. And I like, if you like family friendly films like that, this is gold. I didn't mean to be punny there, but it's the Dora and the Lost City of Gold. Anyway, it's great. You should go check it out.
I've heard that from multiple people that I respect. So I will need to go check that one out. My third one is, and this is in ascending order of enthusiasm, if you couldn't tell.
Sure.
My third one is actually also a female lead movie called Hustlers.
Oh, this was one of the ones
very different from Dora the Explorer.
This was one of the ones that I have not seen, but people seem to really love. That I thought would be on your top five, but so I don't know if it would be on my top five if I've seen it.
It was very close to being on my top five. If there was a top, well, and also I didn't carefully rank my top five, so it may deserve to be in the top this spot. Basically, there were six movies, and this one was the sixth that I thought of, and so it became by default the runner up. But I really liked it a lot.
Yeah,
I really liked it a lot. It was kind of like. It was kind of like The Big Short, but with strippers. and honestly, it was an incredibly well done movie. It was a very well told story with incredibly good actors in the leads. Jennifer Lopez killing it. By the way, way better actress than she's given credit for. I really like Jennifer Lopez. And in general, just a solid dynamite cast with two fantastic leads and an incredibly fresh sort of cinematic style that was just extremely effective and by the end like heart wrenching. And I honestly so my wife actually saw it first. She came home and she said that movie has no business being as good as it is.
Yeah.
And I saw it the day after and I was like, yeah, no, you're right. It's fantastic. So yeah, Hustlers. Awesome. Would totally recommend. Definitely an R-rated movie. So, you know, don't go expecting a family film, but it's great.
Cool. All right. My last honorable mention is the Netflix movie, Extremely Wicked, Shockingly Evil and Vile.
I have not seen it.
You have not seen it.
No.
It's Zac Efron playing Ted Bundy.
Oh.
Yes.
I actually, that's been high on my list to see on Netflix.
It didn't quite make my top five. It is better than, because it came out like right after the documentary came out. Mm. And like everyone's only been talking about the documentary. And I feel like Zac Efron needs a little bit, he needs a little love for what he did in that movie.
I'm nervous. I like Zac Efron so much. I'm like nervous to see him play. Kind of a character.
Yeah. So it's really, I am, it affected me. Oh man, I don't even know if I want to say this, but the character, the reason that it was so effective was that the way that Zac Efron played Ted Bundy made him, like, you can see yourself in him.
Oh, sure.
And that's what's so freaky, because Ted Bundy was obviously who he was, terrible. He was extremely wicked, shockingly evil and vile as a person. And so when I could kind of reflect what I see in myself into that character, it made me so uneasy.
Yeah.
That, but it was exactly what the movie wanted to do.
Yeah.
So
no, that makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense.
It's on Netflix. Sorry, I gotta squeeze in one last honorable mention.
A number four, huh?
So basically,
you're almost at 10. So we should have just done top 10.
We probably should have. The new Christmas Netflix movie. It's called Klaus. It is a Santa origin story.
Okay.
And it's good. And it's an animated movie. And it's just, as they say, delightful.
As you say.
As I say.
So. All right. Well.
All right. Let's jump into our top five.
All right. Number five for me. Oh, this is actually really hard. You know what? I'm going to go ahead and put Late Night at number five.
Okay. All right.
I'm going to try to rank these on the fly, which is probably dangerous, but I'm going to try to do it.
Okay.
I'm going to try to rank these on the fly. So I'm going to put Late Night right there at number five.
Okay, so give us some who above the line and your experience with Late Night.
All right, so Late Night is Emma Watson.
Thompson.
Gosh dang it, man.
All the Emmas.
Yeah.
Emma Thompson
and Mindy Kaling as the, well, I mean, if you've seen the preview, you've seen the movie.
Yeah.
Like, it's Emma Thompson playing a late night talk show host. Mindy Kaling coming on is literally a diversity hire because she had no females on her staff. And Mindy Kaling comes in sort of like in this weird circumstance, really desperately wants to be a comedy writer, full of all kinds of like hope and naivete, and winds up on the staff. And, you know, it's a fantastic movie. It's really, really good. It's really funny.
I don't know why. It just left. Honestly, like, it came and went. No one talked about it, and I have no idea why.
It was something went wrong in the marketing. It didn't hit the sort of cultural appetite of the moment or whatever. But like the failure of this movie to reach audiences was not a consequence of its quality.
Yeah.
It is a very good movie.
Yeah.
It's very, very, very funny. Incredibly heartwarming, heartrending. Emma Thompson has never been better.
I was going to say
she
that.
She is absolutely stunning in this movie. And Mindy Kaling is wonderful.
Yeah.
She's wonderful. I really, really love this movie, and I think everyone should see it. If you have Amazon Prime, you can go see it right now.
Yeah.
It's an Amazon Prime movie. It's an Amazon Studios movie, which means it's just on Prime forever.
Yeah.
So go friggin' watch it. It's fantastic.
The reason I wanted to highlight this movie was because so Mindy wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
And this it hits on some like very politically relevant things. It talks about women in the workplace. It talks about diversity in the workplace. It talks about, like, at one point a woman is crying at work and a guy comes up and is like, "Hey, you need to toughen up." And she responds with like, she got scolded. She said something, gave advice. She got scolded at work. So she's crying about it. A guy comes up and tells her, "Hey, you need to like not talk. You have no experience. You have no reason saying anything." And she bites back by saying, "You know, don't try and silence my female voice." And he's like, "You know, listen, it's not about that at all. Like, I'm all about women in the workplace. I'm all about all of that, but you're still a writer without experience."
Yeah.
So you probably shouldn't be talking. And so it takes these, like, shows you the direction that a lot of movies will go, a lot of preachy movies will go, and then it says what it needs to say and then goes in a different direction. And so it doesn't get distracted with these preachy themes, but they're all in there still. And it's a very, very hard balance to master, and this movie, I think, is mastered it wonderfully.
An exceptionally well-written movie.
Yes.
I mean, this is the movie that I, this is the kind of movie and the kind of, this is the tone of conversation that I crave when talking about like what the sort of hot button political, cultural, relevant topics of today. Like when you're talking about women in the workplace, when you're talking about like ethnic diversity and essentially opportunity and especially entertainment.
Yeah. Even brings up Me Too, Me Too movement.
All that stuff. Yeah. When you're talking about that stuff, this is the kind of conversation I think is really valuable. It's not preachy. It's down to earth. It understands the issues from so many different angles, and it comes at them in a very real and human way, and humanizes everyone involved, which is just absolutely lovely. So I've really, really, really liked it. Also, a quick note about the director, Nisha Ganatra, who I don't know if I'm pronouncing her name right, but I think this might be one of her first features. And she's a relatively newish director in the feature world of like feature length movies, but she's done a ton of TV. So she's directed a ton of TV episodes. I'm like really hoping she comes back to do more movies.
Me too. Yeah.
So because we do speaking of female representation in film, like we need more really great female directors. We need more opportunities for female directors. And I think Late Night. It was really tragic that it didn't hit the way it should have.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. Great choice.
Yeah.
Great choice. All right, my number five was another one that I watched right after Dora and has one of the same actresses in it that had no reason to be as good as it was. You watch the trailer and you're like, man, that is Hollywood making another bad movie. It's Instant Family. With Mark Wahlberg and the girl that plays Dora.
Oh.
Where there are it's Mark Wahlberg and what's her name? Rose something. Rose Byrne. That they are kind of a middle-aged couple who decide to become foster parents, and they end up bringing on these three kids. And they basically learn to be parents and learn to be a family, and they bring up in some very like funny, like comedic ways of like Mark Wahlberg at one point concerned about taking on three Hispanic kids. He's like, oh, are we going to be like viewed as the white saviors and like being like ostracized because of that and all of that? And they address like that idea very plainly and very straightforward. It's Mark Wahlberg. I gotta say, I used to hate Mark Wahlberg. I used to think, why are you acting? But over the last several years, he has won.
Dude,
me
you gotta get on
over.
The Marky Mark train. Marky Mark is, he's a national treasure, man.
He's fantastic.
I love him so much.
It took me a while. I wasn't getting on the train, but and maybe it's because I hadn't seen Departed until relatively recently. But it's fine. I really like him. Instant Family was, it was undersold. This IMDb is saying it came out in 2018. Screw it. It's on the list anyway.
All right. You know, you're not the first person who's told me that that's a really great movie. So I'm going to have to check it out.
It's a tearjerker.
Isabella Merced.
Yes.
Merced is the actress's name. I am very guilty of mispronunciating. Come on. What is happening in my life right now? Mispronouncing is the way that you pronounce mispronouncing. Okay.
Phil, there was some irony there that's you can't write that comedy.
Well,
you know?
you shouldn't. Anyway. All right.
Your number four.
My number four is Rocket Man.
Oh.
I loved Rocket Man. I thought it was great.
You think this was underrated?
I do think it was underrated. What's its face?
Did we not talk about Rocket Man?
Did we do an episode on Rocket Man? This is embarrassing. I don't think we did.
We've done like 115 episodes.
Fairly certain that we did not do an episode on Rocket Man.
Okay.
Directed by Dexter Fletcher, written by Lee Hall. The headline of Rocket Man is Taron Egerton, who was fantastic.
Dude's, yeah. Love him. Yeah. Love him.
What was the recent biopic about
Bohemian Rhapsody?
Bohemian Rhapsody. I feel like all the attention was on Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then Rocket Man came out, and I was guilty of this. Before I went and saw it, I was like, oh, another biopic about a rock star. Like, I don't care. But I loved it. I thought it was beautiful. Like, absolutely beautifully done. And Taron Egerton was magnificent. He was so good that, like, I feel like he's one of my new favorite actors.
Yeah.
He's so good. And also, no business being that good. He's no a business. Pretty boy from freaking London. Like, I know. What is he doing?
Well, did you ever see the animated movie Sing with all the animals?
So that, go ahead and say it.
Well,
go ahead.
Say what? He was the ape in that movie.
Yes, who
sang in Elton
John
and
Elton
John's
song. Yes. That's so, what. Yes.
Yeah, but
I don't like Sing. I don't like it. I don't like it. I don't like that movie.
Did you ever see Eddie the Eagle? Also, Taron Egerton.
No, I didn't.
Anyway, what I'm saying is, I was on the Taron train way before Rocketman.
I did see Kingsman. Which, and he's Kingsman great. 2.
Yeah, I didn't see Kingsman 2.
Kingsman, don't see it.
Okay.
Kingsman was a lot of fun. A lot of problems with Kingsman, but overall, real good time.
It did what
time.
It was supposed
real
to.
Real good time. Kingsman 2, don't see it. But Taron Egerton, great. Love Taron Egerton.
Love him.
Love him.
Yeah, Rocketman was a really good movie. I'm surprised that we didn't cover it, but it deserves to be covered.
Yes.
Because it is that good.
I think it was competing with another movie that weekend. I can't remember which one. Anyway, what's your number?
My number four.
Oh, your number four. We need to go faster. Continue. Okay.
My number four is it's a I'm embarrassed to say, but it's a good movie.
Go for it, man.
It is a movie that is produced by the WWE. It's called Fighting With My Family.
Oh my gosh, dude.
Did you see this movie?
Yes. I loved that movie.
It didn't make it on your list?
No, well, I didn't think about it? I think you remember I said there were maybe some errors on the app?
Yeah,
I think that movie didn't show up because I saw that and I freaking loved it.
I purchased that movie. Because
I'm glad. I'll be borrowing it from you.
I really, really, really like that movie.
That movie will almost definitely make it on my top 10 of 2019. I obviously did not prepare well enough for this podcast. I just did a cursory scroll through all the movies that AMC had told me that I'd watched.
I just Googled 2019 movies, and it popped up, and it was absolutely there.
I should have done that.
Fighting With My Family is... I loved it. It's the story of a brother and sister that dream to fight in the WWE, and they make it to tryouts and everything, and then the girl goes on and the brother does not. And it's kind of her journey. They say it's a true story about, I don't follow the WWE at all. I have zero interest, but there is apparently a significant female wrestler that is known and is very famous in that world.
She's based on basically,
that she is based on. So it's like, it has no reason to be, had no business being as good as it was. But Steven Merchant, if you know who that is,
this is sort of a Rian Johnson situation. If you know who Steven Merchant is, then that movie has every bit of business that it needs being that
totally,
good.
Totally, yeah.
He is so good.
He is great. Steven Merchant actually is on my 5 underrated list twice.
Yeah, I know. I know where he is on the second time, too.
Yeah. So anyway, Fighting With My Family, I definitely recommend it. It's a good, heartwarming, like, go after your dreams, overcome adversity kind of movie, and I definitely recommend it.
Florence Pugh, also. Florence Pugh, who plays... Soraya Knight in Fighting With My Family.
Yeah. Absolutely.
A revelation.
Absolutely fantastic.
She is incredible.
Yeah.
And also, I want her to be in all of the movies now.
Might be my favorite Vince Vaughn.
Oh my gosh, he's
performance.
Great.
He's
so
good.
Oh man.
So good. And The Rock's in it. So
also might be, and this is funny, might be my favorite Lena Headey performance. Yes, I'm including Game of Thrones.
No?
I loved her in this movie. I thought she was perfectly cast. And, of course, we have to give a shout-out to Nick Frost, who plays her father. Honestly, just such a great movie.
Such a great
like a wonderful, feel-good, just
perfect. Go after it movie.
Oh, and honestly, like, yeah, really just... You don't need anything more from a movie than what Fighting With My Family gives you. It's just so great. Anyway, I'm so glad that you did better research than I did on this list.
All right, you said we need to go faster.
My number three,
is
going to be... I'm going to actually save the two most recent from my top two, even though the last three, I would have a really hard time ranking them against each other.
Okay.
So Booksmart.
Can we hold?
I've mentioned before.
Can we hold on that one?
Is that like a later one for you?
It's a later one for
all me. Right.
Okay.
We'll hold on that one. Know that it's in my top
my,
three.
Yeah, my number three is probably your number two. My number three is Jojo Rabbit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Jojo Rabbit. Oh, okay. Well,
I mean, then we could talk about either
one. Let's just talk about Booksmart first.
Okay.
Booksmart. Amazing.
Fantastic.
Booksmart was, in my opinion, this is my like way too reductionist, stupid summary of Booksmart. Okay. And that is that it was like a female-led Superbad, but yeah. Way better.
Yeah, I mean, that's how they marketed it, too.
Yeah.
Not to mention the male lead of Superbad is siblings with the female lead of Booksmart.
Yeah.
So there's a tie there, too.
Absolutely.
Also, Beanie is way funnier than her brother, if you ask me.
Well, I mean.
But Booksmart is... I was so uncomfortable so many times watching Booksmart.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, I... In particular, when no, we're not going to spoil it. It's fine. There's an Uber scene
great.
I was cringing but laughing, which is pretty much the feeling of that entire movie.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. Also, just you mentioned Beanie Feldstein. Also, Caitlin Dever is probably my new favorite actress.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
of that in that generation, that like that younger generation. I don't know how old she is. I'm actually looking it up right now because I'm curious. She's like 23. Anyway, she still looks like she's 15. Anyway, she is so good.
Yeah.
She's so good. Beanie's great. Caitlin Dever is she's doing, I think, in many respects, a harder thing because she plays straight man.
Very much Beanie's, so. Yeah.
But she still has to be really funny and really engaging, and she is fantastic. And also, I'm really high on Caitlin Dever right now, too, because I just finished watching Unbelievable on Netflix, and she is, like, heartbreakingly, tragically wonderful in that show.
Is she unbelievable?
She is. I'm
sorry.
Here's the thing.
I'm sorry.
If you'd seen the show, you wouldn't have said that.
Oh, no.
but, like, respect, you know? Like, because it's about rape. But like,
can we edit this? Right?
Not very often,
terrible.
CJ.
That's terrible.
Anyway,
I'm sorry.
Caitlin Dever is amazing. Booksmart is amazing. Beanie Feldstein is amazing. Also, freaking Olivia Wilde directing like a fighter.
So excited.
She's so good. I want to see
about
whatever she does.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
She's so good.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah. Nerding out Booksmart all the way.
Yeah. All right. So Jojo Rabbit.
Jojo Rabbit.
Jojo freaking Rabbit. So,
we're probably going to end up doing an episode on Jojo Rabbit.
So let's say
very little about it other than like here's the thing. No one should say anything about Jojo Rabbit other than that it's about a Hitler youth Nazi boy and his imaginary friend who is Hitler.
And that's all you need to know. That is all you need
to know. You just don't need to know anything else about the movie.
Yeah. I don't think I loved that movie as much as like nearly everybody. It was one of those situations where everyone's like, it's amazing. It's amazing. It's amazing. It's amazing. It's amazing. So when I went to go see it and it wasn't quite what I expected, I left, like, it wasn't that I was disappointed, but I was confused. But as I've thought about the movie more and more and what it does, I am continually more and more impressed.
Yeah.
It started out as my number five and has crept up my list over the past couple of days.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And that kid who plays Jojo.
Oh, my gosh. Amazing.
Apparently, he's never been in a movie before.
That's wild.
Yeah, I was listening to an interview with Taika Waititi, who directed and wrote this movie. It's kind of like his... You know, it's funny. We've got these... I love this about the modern filmscape. We've got these directors that come along and dip into giant, giant franchises. And then they do the movie, and then they go off on their own, and they spend like a year or two making their own little movie that has nothing to do with any franchise at all, but they can be marketed a little bit on the back of the fact that this director was involved with this
Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah, the director of Thor Ragnarok, you know, brought to you by whatever. And so people went and saw this movie, and it was fantastic. And the same thing with Rian Johnson and Knives Out, the director of Star Wars The Last Jedi. And it's like, oh, well, I'll go see that. So I just love that works sometimes.
Yeah. Anyway. Sometimes.
Anyway. Yeah. Oh, by the way, the kid's name is Roman Griffin Davis, and he is just fantastic.
I mean, so is Scarlett Johansson.
Oh, yeah.
So good.
Just a quick note. My favorite ScarJo role.
I almost said that, but I'm not willing to commit yet. I got to think about it more.
You won't need to think long. Trust me.
Okay.
It's not like ScarJo's great. She's usually not the best part of the movie she's in.
Yeah.
In this, she's also not the best part.
But she's close.
But she's close.
She's real close.
Really good in this.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
And there are a few ScarJo movies that I haven't seen that people think of as maybe her best. So, like, I shouldn't. But from my experience.
Yeah.
My favorite. Yeah, anyway.
Okay, what's your number one?
Whoa. We're not at number one yet, are we?
Yeah, because...
Are we?
Yeah.
Number one?
Because your Late three night. Was Booksmart. My Booksmart, two was Booksmart.
Rocket Man, Late Night. Jojo. Okay, yeah. Well, I'm not going to say this is my number one. It's just in the top three.
Okay, sure.
Parasite.
So this was one that I have not seen that I assumed would be
okay
at the top of your list.
Yeah, it's, I mean, honestly.
But you can't say anything about it because that's what I've been told.
Yeah, you shouldn't say much about it other than that it is. So all I'll say about it is stuff that has nothing to do with the actual plot. And that is that it was directed by Bong Joon-ho, who is this very good Korean director, writer-director, who previous to this has been famous for the two movies that I know him best for are The Host, which came out quite a while ago. It was like early 2000s, I think. And Snowpiercer, which came out just a few years ago. Both of which I love. They're so good. They're like, you watch these movies. When I saw The Host, I was totally unfamiliar with Korean cinema. I didn't know that this kind of thing was happening in Korea. I was like, oh my gosh, there are some Koreans making some really good movies. Wow. I need to know more about this. Anyway, and then Snowpiercer is actually a very sort of American movie, but also directed by Bong Joon-ho, starring Chris Evans, one day maybe we'll do an episode about Snowpiercer because I love that movie so much.
I need to see that one too.
It's so good, man. It's so good. It's so good. Have you seen any Bong Joon-ho movies?
No.
Oh boy, CJ, you are in for some treats.
I'm excited.
You are in for some fun times. So but then the other movie that he's fairly well known for recently is Okja, which came out I think a couple years ago and made big splashes in critical circles.
Yeah.
I didn't see Okja. It seems like the kind of movie I don't want to see. Anyway, the point is, Parasite is, we've been talking a lot in the past couple of weeks about social commentary and about the being sort of culturally relevant and things that seem like they matter to current conversations about things that are making people feel a lot of emotions and frustration and passions. And I've not seen very many better kind of stories that are structured entirely on top of the idea of classism and class warfare. Mm. It's a really good movie, and it's really funny. It's really disturbing. It's really like thrilling and suspenseful. All while being very contained about like two families, basically. Cool. And it is so good. And
I'm excited to watch it.
Bong Joon-ho is the director. Like, he might be one of the best writer directors in the world. Because if you open up the competition to writers and directors of the world, it's going to be like, I mean, Rian Johnson, it's going to be Bong Joon-ho. And like, there's very few people that can match them in like storytelling, like really strict observance of like how to tell a really good story and execute it in fresh, visionary ways on film. Anyway, really, really great stuff. I'm done.
Cool.
See Parasite.
See Parasite. I will be seeing Parasite. My number one most underrated movie of 2019 is a movie called The Peanut Butter Falcon.
Oh man, this is a movie I need to see.
Yeah,
people that I very much love and respect have been demanding that I see this movie for like a while now. So, but give me your take, man.
It is the feel good movie of the year. Not that it doesn't talk about some very important stuff, but it's It's essentially just one a guy played by Shia LaBeouf. His name's Tyler. We don't know a last name. It's Tyler, who is mixed up in some things and is not necessarily on the run, but is on a journey by himself. And he gets a stowaway on his boat, and it takes place in like the swamps of like Louisiana, and everybody has real thick accents. And a kid named Zach stows away on his boat, and it's a kid with Down syndrome that is looking to go to a wrestling school. And so Tyler commits to help take him to this wrestling school, and it's their journey, and it's their bond, and it's just really, I'm such a sucker for the bromances, like a solid good, whether it's like actual brothers or just two guys that have bonded over time. I'm such a sucker for it. And this one might be one of the better depictions of genuine love between two men, and that would just do anything for each other. And you also have Dakota Johnson, who a lot of people write off, but I think she's great, and she's great in this movie. There's some conversations about like mental illness and how to handle it and how to treat the people with it, and it poses a lot of good questions for you to think about in your own life. And I don't personally know anybody like closely that has Down syndrome, but I can imagine if I did, this movie would just be that much better. So I recommend it.
It feels
absolutely
authentic.
Everybody. So, one of the most genuine movies I think I've ever seen, to the point that like their conversations, either the kid that plays Zach, who's the actor's name is actually Zach, who is the guy with Down syndrome. The conversations are so genuine. I don't know, but it feels like there's no way they're scripted. Like it's Shia LaBeouf hanging out with this kid named Zach, and they filmed it and they put it in the movie. Like I just was,
I love it when it feels like that.
It was great. This will be a movie that I own as well.
So I am really glad that we did this episode.
Me too.
This was a lot of fun. We should do this more often. I want to say also that the title of this podcast, I think, was probably a little bit shamefully clickbaity, because none of these movies were actually underrated in terms of like how people, like the people who saw them loved them. Like
underseen?
These are movies that
underperformed.
These
sure.
are movies that haven't made as much money as they should have. And the reason that we're calling them underrated or underperforming or whatever on our podcast is because we have dedicated our main episodes every Friday to the highest box office earners. And sometimes we fail. Yeah. Like
who knew Downton Abbey would win the box office?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Or Charlie's Angels would be such
Bomb.
A flop.
Yeah.
And Ford v. Ferrari, which in retrospect, we should have known, obviously, that would take the box office. But I personally cared more about Charlie's Angels, and I make no apologies. Anyway, so we spend a lot of time and energy on those box office hits. And
that could be fueling the wrong engine.
Yes.
Long term.
As it turns out, many of the best movies every year, in fact, most of the best movies every year, are not top box office earners. Yeah. This should come as a surprise to no one.
Yeah.
And the spirit of our podcast, I believe, remains untarnished by our mission to cover the box office earners. That's
Agreed.
One of the things. I mean, we there's a lot of reasons. We're not going to get into it right now, but there's a lot of reasons we do that. But it's really wonderful to be able to talk about some of these other movies as well sometimes.
I agree.
And you should see them, listeners. If you are looking for movies to see, know that your trusted nerd and critic are not going to lead you astray with these kinds of movies.
Yes, endorse these movies.
Yeah.
You can also, if you find this episode on nerdcriticpodcast.com, I will put links to the various movies. Some of them you won't be able to see because they're still in theaters. Some of them you'll only be able to rent. But some of them are on Netflix. Some of them are on Amazon Prime. I will, in the show notes for this episode, I will put out links to all of them because we want you to see them because they're good and they deserve to be seen. Even if they didn't make a ton of money in the box office, they should absolutely be seen. Plus, I'm guessing you'll probably be a little more prepped for Oscar season.
Amen to that. So. Amen to that. And that it is real work to prepare for Oscar season.
It is. It is. No question.
Especially since so many Oscar baity movies land in December. Anyway.
Yeah, you have like a month and a half to see all of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway. Thank you, CJ, by the way, for suggesting this.
Yeah, of course.
This is all CJ's idea.
Thank you for not being
even,
on board.
Not even my idea. And I have some movies to see based on this conversation.
Yeah, me too.
Cool.
Thank you, Michael Bodenmiller, for the wonderful music that we are hearing.
The outro music, not the outro. Oh, no, he did the intro music too. So, yeah, thank you.
So, the music just in general, but the outro music that you're hearing right now.
Yes. Man, I try so hard to be funny. I so often am not. Regardless, please remember, everyone, to collect movies like a nerd. Oof. And rewatch them like a critic. I did it.
And cut.